Coming up on The Gist of It, Homer night in Canada, mortgage your house to see the Cup Final.
Next stop, Victoria's Secret Park. Victoria's Secret Park is our next stop.
Up against the blue wall, why so long to charge an officer in a G20 occurrence? And Anthony Weiner, not going anywhere. Not yet. All of this and more, coming up on The Gist of It.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is The Gist of It. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
I have a pair of tickets to sell, Bill.
All right.
And I'm asking $17,999.99 for those tickets. They're third row seats. This is the asking price. It's the highest one I've found so far, and it'll change as the day goes on. I'm certain of it. And by the way, $18,000, all right? You're not fooling anybody when you're asking for $17,999.99. Oh, that sounds a heck of a lot cheaper than $18,000. That's for a pair tonight. That's the top price I've been able to find so far. On eBay, there's somebody selling them for $3,800 a piece. But they want, the bid is $3,800. They want $10,000.
Okay, so that's $9,000 a seat. I wouldn't pay that if you gave me two seats on the altar for William and Kate's wedding.
I'm supposing you wouldn't go for the $206,000 for a private suite.
Sorry?
To impress your friends. To reward your friends for hanging around with you.
Do I get it for a year?
You get it for the game. And I don't even know if that includes food services. Because, you know, when you can get private boxes, you know, down at the Dome and that kind of thing now on a game-by-game basis,
sure,
which was unheard of before. And it's like, here's how much for the tickets. Oh, and by the way, the chicken fingers are going to be this much and the nachos and that sort of thing. So I don't know if that's, you know, inclusive of all of that kind of thing. But it gets me to thinking and wondering, how far would you go? And let's remove a variable here. I mean, could talk about, well, if we're just an ordinary working Joe, of course we're not going to spend. Let's say you are a millionaire. You've got all kinds of money. Is there still a point? For instance, the $18,000 for two. No problem. You can spend that kind of money the way I might spend grocery money at a Loblaws on a Thursday night. Would you still do it, or would you just go, no, that's just way too much money for this kind of thing. I could do other things.
I wouldn't, but I'm sure there are people who would. Clearly, someone will. Someone has.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with this is there's an element of people, a group of people who are so much enamored with whatever the sports team is that they follow that things truly are priceless. I mean, I know that's the Visa commercial, and I think it's a great commercial campaign. Reality tells me
it's
that,
MasterCard, actually.
Well,
but
well, okay, so it's not as good a campaign
problem
as I thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it? Yeah, well, okay, whatever. That's getting me off topic here. The point is that I do think there is a price with stuff like this. And even if I had millions, I don't think I'd pay
you. Wouldn't do it.
No, because, I mean, for one thing, I think I do prefer watching things on television now. And I think that's a big problem for all sports.
Yeah.
I get the idea that you want to be there. I fully understand that. But the part you really want to be there for is the party afterwards. So I can watch from a bar across the street or someplace else, and as soon as everybody storms out of Rogers Center, it is the Rogers Center out there, Rogers Arena.
Something like that.
Yeah. Again, branding.
Yeah.
But the point is, I can still get involved in the party and the emotion. And also, if there's a winning goal, say it goes to overtime, I can see it five or six times.
So you've got the money of Richard Branson, you know, and you're still not going to... I'm not saying the sensibility of Richard, because he would just, you know what?
He'd buy the rink.
Well, yes, he would. So you would... No, way too much money, easy for me to spend. That's uncalled for. Just not going to do it. But it's not even, if I'm hearing you correctly, it's not even because you have some kind of a philosophical or moral objection to this. It's just that there are better ways to see the game.
Now, I will preface that by saying I would definitely watch the NBC feed. Because I've had it with CBC, but that's another issue.
Well, let's get into that too then. I was going to say, I mean, for $206,000... my private box better be the one where Jim Houston and Craig Simpson are standing, and I get to hang around with them. Then that seems like that might be a reasonable price.
You know, I'd pay that if it was those two if I had a crossbow.
Pardon me?
If I had a crossbow and I could take out both
what
of them.
What's the problem? Oh. You know what? CBC's coverage is as good as it ever has been. All right, spell out the
they're
problem.
They're pandering to, it's the Canadian team. Houston used to be the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks. I understand.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs many years ago.
But I understand where he'd be close to them. I get that. Right. But let's face it, there are two teams in this final. I've been watching every game. I've noticed both teams in every game, and I don't get any sense of Boston from these guys. As a matter of fact, it's almost as if they're cheerleading. I won't even go say almost as if. They are cheerleading.
I don't know. They're not. I don't get that at all. I have no idea what you're talking about. I've watched this series stem to stern. I don't get that.
Well, I'll give you a great example. When Aaron Rome hit Nathan Horton, the first thing that came out of their mouths was, oh, now the Canucks are going to be down to five defensemen, and it's a long game, and they traveled 4,000 kilometers. And
I doubt that was the first thing that came out.
It was the first thing Glenn Healy said. It was exactly the first thing he said. And the whole point was, oh, woe is the Canucks. How are we going to win this game? Drives me nuts. Drives me crazy the way they're doing it. Look, I'm all for... I shouldn't say I'm all for a Canadian team to win. I don't really care. But
why do you not love this country, Bill? Why are you not supporting the troops?
My belief is that if you're a fan of a team, you can't be a fan of another team just because of where they are geographically.
Like, say again?
I'm a Leaf fan.
So you're not allowed to root for the Canucks?
If the Canadians or the Canucks are in the Stanley Cup, if it's the Oilers, I don't care.
You would rather see an American team win the Stanley Cup than another Canadian team do it before your beloved Leafs? Is that basically what I'm hearing?
Or no, it's
what you said?
Look, I could have. As a matter of fact, I do think I rooted for the Oilers and the Flames when they were in the Stanley Cup Finals. But it had nothing to do with them being Canadian. It had everything to do with who they were playing against. I don't know about you, but every time I look at an event, there's a pecking order of teams I like.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, the Canucks, Canadians, are very low on my pecking order. I'm not a big Bruins fan, but I like them better, so I want them to win.
All right.
That's all it is.
I don't have some misguided sense of nationalism. I don't want that to, to come across that way.
Come a little bit.
Yeah, well, I don't want it to come across that way because...
Oh, Canada! Sorry.
Since you're talking about that, let me just say at this moment, right now, I don't care what anybody says about Philadelphia and the Kate Smith video and Chicago and that kind of, there is nothing in all of sports to me pregame that matches the Canadian anthem at a Canucks game, particularly the energy that has been amped up. Fantastic. Well, it's not so much about the, as you call him, the fat guy with the hair, Bill. It's more about him pointing the microphone at everybody and with the fullest of throats, probably because they've been drinking beer pregame. They let it fly. It's spine tingling to me. They do it well in Vancouver. The whole, U2 where the streets have no name on an endless loop. And then this guy comes out and he's got a massive voice. And then the whole, there's nothing like it in sports. I don't care what anybody says. Not anywhere.
I think they set a record last game. I'm pretty sure it was game five, for most amount of people singing a national anthem wearing sandals.
Bill, how would you feel about getting off at the subway station?
I'd feel fine. Fine.
Maybe. Subway, the sandwich place.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it.
Can you hear that conversation?
Couldn't it be confusing, though?
I'll meet you at the subway station. Oh, okay, which one? The subway station. Yeah, I know, which one? The subway station. Which one? Hey, Abbott.
There is a bit there, question.
The Fords would like to sell off the naming rights to subway stations and some other city properties and things that are owned by the city, but not City Hall itself. However...
Well, it can be bought.
What Doug Ford say about this? We've got to bring in revenue. No doubt that is the truth. As long as it's called the right name, he said. Spadina, McDonald's, whatever. It brings in revenue. I honestly don't believe anyone cares. Well, judging by the comments I've seen... that go underneath, this story in the Globe and Mail, for instance, I think a lot of people care.
Well, I think it's funny because, firstly, to bring up the topic with Subway, I mean, they're the one company that wouldn't have to do this. They're already on every stop. So, yeah. And in actual fact, there'd probably be something clever that they could work out of it. But I don't really, I'm one of those people who don't really care. I mean, I do think that we, you know, as a society, we have to start figuring out ways to pay for things. And, you know, if this is one of them, I'm okay with it. I got to say, if I'm McDonald's or any other company looking at buying a subway station, the idea is ludicrous to me. I don't know where you can get any value out of it. And so that part of it I get. But the, are you familiar with Matthew Good?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Did a song. My favorite song of his has something to do with this and something we could see happening. Remember he did a song called Advertising on Police Cars?
That I don't recall. Could you sing a little bit of it for me right now?
Advertising. No, you don't want to hear me sing.
I do.
Sing.
I
no,
really
you don't.
Do.
I can tell you.
Bill, we'll edit this out. Don't worry about it.
But the idea behind it was that, you know, essentially everything's for sale. That part of it is scary. But the fact is we do have to start paying for some of this stuff. And, you know, to me, to buy the naming rights to a subway station, it's silly. It's stupid. But it doesn't hurt anybody, so I don't care.
I don't think it really makes any sense economically for a company to do that.
I'd agree.
You know, especially you know, if Doug Ford's big plan is, which, you know, he always seems to throw the word "whatever" in there. By the way, I don't think it'd be whatever. We could do it. I mean, if you want to call it, you know, Spadina McDonald's, fine. If you can sell it, but if I'm McDonald's, people are just going to call it Spadina anyway. The only way arena naming rights work is if the arena is named just that company's name. You know, as opposed to...
Like the Air Canada Centre.
Right. I mean, if it were Air Canada Maple Leaf Gardens, people would just still have... They would say, go into the gardens.
Yeah.
You would lose that. So I can't see that you would name all the subway stops after corporations, because then you run into what I was talking about. I was being, you know, facetious about it off the top, but... Yeah, I'll meet you at the. Oh, I was going to say the DuPont station. How about that? I mean, but that actually
there
would
is
work.
Another one for
that
sure.
That one would actually work. Yeah. But I mean, if you're just going to
Chemical
meet
Alley, isn't it?
If you're going to meet, I'll meet you at Sleep Country Canada. You know their plan. Well, where is that? Right. Yeah. You still need the geographic location, and that's what people are going to use. But you know what? By the way, Sleep Country Canada. Yeah. Queen and King stops, I suppose they could.
There you go.
Yeah,
you're thinking
Saint Clairol stop. Just add the OL to it, and you could also have St. Clair All West if you wanted to. I mean, somebody that I know, I have to give them credit for this, because this might be the best of all. Jackson Prosco from Global News came up with maybe the best subway stop name, and that would be Bed, Bathurst, and Beyond.
He needs a lot of help. But that is clever. You know, really, all kidding aside, which is difficult to do with this topic, it's indicative of... the fact that we need to figure out ways to get new revenue if we're going to continue
right.
As a city. I mean, you know, one of the things about a city like Toronto is it costs a lot of money. And, you know, the reason that Rob Ford and Doug Ford, his brother, were elected was essentially to start cutting costs or, on the other side, picking up some more revenue from other locations. And it's to me, this is an idea. It's like throwing something against the wall. This one I don't think will stick, but something similar will.
And it's not something that solves the problem. We keep hearing that the city has a shortfall, you know, when it comes to next year's budget of, you know, $750 million. This isn't chump change. And I can't imagine that this kind of a project is going to bring in a huge amount of money. But the argument will be made, and I think rightfully so, that a lot of smaller projects like this will add up. I mean, if you think you're going to get the $750 million in one fell swoop somewhere, good on you. What's your plan? I don't know what that might be. So it appears that you have to cobble together some financial plans that make a little bit of sense that can add up. And it goes beyond subway stops, too, by the way. You know, except for City Hall, for some reason, they didn't want to sell the naming rights to City Hall. Is that... Why stop there? Really?
Don't you think? Who bought City Hall? I did.
I never thought of it from that angle, but you know what? Well, at least we'd know publicly.
No, yeah, that's right. You know, the reality is to all of this stuff, you know, I think when the city was amalgamated, what's that, 20 years ago now? Maybe a little more than that. It was supposed to eventually add money to the coffers. Didn't happen. They're still sitting on so much land everywhere, and they're not selling it off. If we want to live in a city like Toronto, a great city, and I think we both agree that's exactly what it is, some of this stuff you have to pay for. And I hate to say it, but that might mean you got to raise your taxes a little bit.
Well, I have a larger vision here, geographically, I suppose. And that is, look, it continues to frustrate me as a resident of Toronto, as a resident of Ontario, that the rest of the country just fires pot shots at the so-called center of the universe, while still to this day, so much more money flows out of Toronto and out of the province of Ontario than comes back in transfer payments. Now, the arguments vary, but they're high. Is it $17 billion a year or $22 billion a year? The difference between what leaves Ontario and comes back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for, you know, creating as strong a nation as possible and doing our fair share. But it's time for some of this stuff to trickle back, in my estimation.
Question.
And since, you know, the Tories have ridden to a majority, in large part because Toronto came to bat, let's see some of this money come back, Mr. Harper. Let's have some money trickling back to Ontario, back through Ontario, back to Toronto.
Doesn't that bring up another question? Because one of the things that I took from the Tories' rhetoric going into this election was, well, one of the reasons why, you know, money wasn't trickling is you don't have any Tories representing you. That's a kind of political blackmail to me.
Yes.
And frankly, if that's what happened here, something's really wrong. However, it appears to be the way it is. And it will bear watching that if that in fact is the case, that Toronto all of a sudden starts getting goodies because of that, on one hand, I'll be happy. On another hand, I'll be really pissed.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
Donna, it was just about a year ago, I guess, or almost a year ago, that the G20 summit was held here in Toronto. What were your thoughts when that was going on?
Well, you know, and watching it unfold on TV, I thought what a lot of people thought, and I thought about it before I was watching it unfold on TV, actually, which was never have something like that here.
I disagree with you about why it has to be here, because I think sometimes you have to step up. It has to be somewhere, and it was our turn. So I get that. I think that we spent way too much money on it. It was an unnecessary money, a lot of unnecessary money, by a government that is supposedly taking care of every dollar that's sent to Ottawa. I don't buy that. I was really upset by the way the police worked, though. And I, you know, one of the things I've always been most proud of about this country is, for the most part, we aren't a police state. We've never been a police state. I trust policemen. I count some of them among my friends. Quite a few of them among my friends, actually. And I think generally they're pretty good guys. But they were made to look pretty bad here. They were made to look like, I don't know, they were from some third world country that was putting the boots to everybody. That scared me. I didn't like seeing it. I don't like seeing this city treated as an occupied city. And I further am really upset with the situation with PC Glenn Waddell, who's been now charged with assault in the case with Dorian Barton for an incident at Queen's Park where he was allegedly beaten. We say allegedly. He was beaten. We're just not sure by who.
Right.
And there were, I believe, 11 different police officers who couldn't identify him. A big blue wall put up. And what concerns me about that, if you and I are gang members and something happens, they take you into a room and they impress upon you, and by they I mean the police, look, you got to take care of yourself. You know what? We know you didn't do this, but something bad happened here, something against the law, and you have to tell us. You have to, you know, you cannot stay part of this gang mentality and keep your mouth shut. You've got to tell us the truth, what really happened. They didn't pass that test themselves. You can't tell me that these guys didn't know who that police officer was. They knew, and they were sticking together, and that's wrong.
But I think there's a very real difference here. I mean, when the police are interrogating somebody, it's very likely because they were involved in something. And let's be straight. There are times when they know for sure somebody's been involved in something, and so they're trying to protect the greater good. And I think that when one of theirs steps over the line, it would be pretty easy to, in a situation like the G20 summit, pretty easy to be in a situation that, you know, your brethren might find unfortunate and think, there but for the grace of God go I. And, you know, Bill's a good guy. If he reacted over the line here a little bit, I don't think it's criminal. I think he was pushed into it. I think it was a very, very difficult situation. Danger for everybody.
But that's not your decision. That's what happens when it goes before the courts. What you have to do is stand up for what's right. And in this particular case, you know this because everything you do in your everyday job tells you, you got to say it.
Right.
Instead, they reacted, it's a fellow cop. And that's the problem.
We see it with police. We've seen it for many, many years. And firefighters and those who are in dangerous jobs have a very close relationship. They're very tightly knit. They're very protective of each other. So I'm not surprised that this happened. You're right. In the pursuit of justice and the truth, it would be nice for them to put that aside. And say, yeah, I know who that guy is in the video. It's that guy.
But
But you know what? I want to be a witness for him because I think it was a difficult situation.
But you can still do that. The thing, don't we hold these guys to a higher standard?
It's tough to argue against this in this scenario in its simplest form. Look at the video. Do you know that guy?
Pretty simple.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
When you look at it that way, it's pretty simple. Yeah. I know that guy. It's so-and-so. All right, next. Do you know that guy? Yeah, I know that guy. It's so-and-so.
I think Blair, Police Chief Bill Blair, should resign over this because the way that whole situation, that whole weekend worked on the Saturday, letting
What's
the police cars
accomplish?
Burn.
Well, the police
someone
chief,
has to be responsible.
But what does it accomplish? I mean, I hear this all the time. They should resign because of this. They should. What is that going to accomplish? If Bill Blair were to step up and say, if I resign, will we have a better situation where people are identifying
culprits? Well, it's culpability. Somebody has.
It's a hollow. It's a hollow maneuver. It doesn't accomplish anything. Just have somebody. Bill Blair's not responsible for that. He just happens to be the police chief. I mean, can we realistically expect that he can ride shotgun, and control?
Well,
somebody
was ordering these guys. Saturday, they let them go. On the Sunday, they cracked down.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't Blair, it was somebody else. If you can tell me who it was, then I'll say let's have his head.
Well, do you think Bill Blair's done a good job otherwise? I mean, you want him to resign. If you felt that Bill Blair was doing a pretty decent job, and then the police services came up woefully short of the proper standards in this situation. That's it.
Well, here's the thing, though. You're talking about this situation as if it's a singular situation where something bad happened. I would argue that this particular situation put a black eye on this country, on this city. It was something I thought I'd never see in Canada, ever. And I saw it in my hometown. And I do think someone has to pay for that, whether it's Bill Blair, whether it's Dalton McGuinty next provincial election. It seriously wasn't Stephen Harper, which again, bothers
me. How about putting the blame where it lies? With anarchists, with black bloc members, with people who want to do of misdeed in this situation. That's where the blame lies. Everything else is a reaction out of that. And sometimes you have overreaction and you have misdeeds and they need to be investigated and they need to be prosecuted.
It was a much bigger
let me ask you this. Before the G8 and the G20, did you find that there were a lot of problems with police and riot gear walking around the city of Toronto and gathering people in front of McDonald's and holding them?
No, and there hasn't been since. I get that. But that weekend, that was someplace else. That was, I don't know what it was, maybe Santiago, Chile, or someplace. It wasn't here, and it should never have been here. Don, how would you like it if, all of a sudden, around the world, people uttered the name Don Landry, and they looked at it as a punchline? How would you feel?
How have I felt about that, Bill? Oh, around the world. That's different.
Okay.
That's around my house. I have already experienced this. My wife often looks at me and says, what the hell is wrong with you?
Oh.
Or, no, you know what? That's not fair. She has not said that. But I know she's thinking it, Bill. You're talking about the name Anthony Weiner.
Exactly.
Yeah. As an aside... Is it an aside if I haven't even really started to talk? I don't think
it is. We'll call it an aside.
Stop calling it Wienergate, people. for two reasons. One, it's not clever to just put gate on the end of something. There was a Watergate scandal. You can't just put gate on it and think you're being clever. Mm-hmm. Two, if there was such a thing as a Wienergate and Anthony had one, we wouldn't be in this situation. His wiener would have been gated. No pictures, no Twitter, nothing. It doesn't happen, all right? So it's a misnomer, I guess. Anthony's got to be feeling it.
Oh.
I mean,
he was feeling it.
The commander-in-chief has basically said quit. Barack Obama didn't use those exact words, but he did say, I think it was on the Today Show earlier this week, if it were me, I'd be stepping down. There's a great argument to be had here, and that is, should a man like Anthony Weiner step down? Has he shown such poor judgment, such bad judgment, that he can't possibly have good judgment in areas that matter when it comes to running a country?
Two things. Firstly, you mentioned everything that that is suffixed with gate refers to the original Watergate, which, of course, was an apartment complex in Washington. What if it had been called Waterville? All of a sudden, everything was Ville. So it would be Wienerville. And I know that's not a place I'd ever want to go. On top of that, if it's Wienergate, why don't you just call it what it really is, Zipper? I'm just saying.
That's fine, too.
Yeah, exactly. It seems to work. It, getting somewhat serious for a moment,
let me give you the question again. I mean, does this indicate a guy who just doesn't have good judgment anything at all?
No, and I think that's one of the things that to me is a bother here. Anthony Weiner is a guy who I had heard of. Now, that doesn't mean much. I do somewhat follow American politics and Canadian politics, world politics to some extent. I read a lot, and there are an awful
lot of politics, Bill. Find time to do this podcast?
I do. I don't know how I do it. But he was one of the few guys in Congress that I actually had heard of. He was an up-and-comer, if you'll pardon the pun.
Oh, come on.
This whole story is loaded with them, much like his shorts. But that's another thing. But the point is that, you know, I think sometimes the punishment has to fit the crime. Yeah, this guy, he has shown bad judgment. I don't think anybody can argue that. But I also think he has really suffered here. I mean, if you or I were to do something like that, it would be embarrassing. Mm-hmm. It would probably have some ramifications in our personal life. I know it would. But that's as far as it would go. Right. And that's as far as it should go here, too, because this guy has probably ruined his marriage, probably ruined his career, because while I don't think he has to resign now, he's going to have a hard time getting reelected. And more so than that, the currency that congressmen live on is the level of respect they receive. And his just plummeted. This guy is now a joke. And to me, that's enough. You can't tell me that of the 435 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, there aren't people into things that are a lot weirder than this.
Yeah.
His problem was he got caught.
Well, a lot of them do. And you said something before. I'm not so sure he can't bounce back from this. I'm not so sure he wouldn't get elected again, because I think there are a couple of things the American public and probably the Canadian public really enjoy, and that is watching somebody who's on high fall and go thud.
It's a great story.
What else do they like? They
like to see him come back.
Redemption is a great plot line that we see over and over again. People can be redeemed and people root for them. Ah, it's great to see them come back.
Do you see any element of hypocrisy in all of this, though? Because I do think, like I said to you a minute ago, these kinds of situations, these sexual mores that we look at, they differ for everybody. And I guarantee you there are people into a lot weirder stuff than he is. Well, maybe not a lot weirder, but somewhat weirder.
And you know what? It sounds like you've got some inside information. Your deep throat on this, Bill?
No. Again, bad choice of words.
I think it was an excellent choice of words, actually. I don't necessarily believe it means he can't govern. There. That's as concisely as I can put it. But I think, you know, look, I've been on Twitter for a year now or so. it's not that hard to not send pictures of your crotch on Twitter. I have not felt this great allure to take, you know, pictures with my iPhone and send them to somebody.
I think I speak for everyone, Don. A grateful Twitter nation thanks you.
Bombs away, boys. Bombs away.
This week on Bombs Away, Bill talks about, oh, isn't this nice? I think it sounds like it could be nice. Dreams.
Yeah, well, you know what? That intro actually is somewhat appropriate, Don, because I sometimes think we're all getting too cynical, too jaded, too negative. People don't have dreams anymore. Maybe it's because it's too painful when they don't come true. Maybe it's because it's a waste of time. As we get older, we realize real life doesn't allow for dreams. Maybe we like to wallow in negativity because it makes the mundane that much easier to accept. And I think that's too bad. One of my favorite James Taylor songs is from his Flag album. It's called Millworker. Right? Do you know it?
No.
Well, it's a song he wrote, and it was used in a Studs Terkel play called Working. It's written from the point of view of, surprise, a millworker. She knows it's a really boring job, and she spends each morning waiting for a daydream to get her through her day. I say, great. If you're needing a daydream to get through your day, go for it. Dream big. It's worked for a lot of people, and it doesn't cost a cent. And you know, for all you negative Nellies, there's nothing wrong with dreaming. The worst that could happen is they don't come true.
Listen, folks, if you're not going to take advice from Bill Hayes, the least you can do is take advice from someone named Studs Terkel.
It's the gist of it, and we are recording this on Wednesday, June 15th, which means Game 7 tonight. We'll be real quick about this. Who wins and why?
Vancouver Canucks win.
Why?
Homer series. Hold serve. Everybody's won at home. They can do it again. They showed that they can push back after a troubling loss. They did that in Game 5. They can push back after a troubling loss in Game 6, and I think they will.
I think it's going to be Boston because I think, as opposed to the three games in Boston, they've come very close to winning in Vancouver already. And I think tonight they finally got over that hump. I think that they've been the better team throughout the series. I'm surprised that the Canucks have been able to push this to Game 7. They don't deserve it. Well, Don, that's the gist of it for, I'd say, another week, but really it's the first week. We've been practicing this, and we finally got it to a point where, well, we're kind of letting other people hear it.
It's alive! Yes, you could say, apropos of Anthony Weiner, I guess, since we were talking about him, we've got our first gist of it under our belts. Photographic proof may or may not be forthcoming on Twitter.
Yeah, I hope not, frankly. And if it does happen, it wasn't me.
See you next week, Bill. I'll try to do better.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The gist of it is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.